Welcome to Expert Second Opinion, Current and Future Roles of Immunotherapy and Targeted Therapy in the Management of Advanced Gastroesophageal Cancers. These are excerpts from a meeting we had January 9th at the GI ASCO meeting in San Francisco. The meeting was moderated by Dr. Sam Klempner from the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, and faculty members included Drs. Jaffer Ajani from the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Dr. Rutika Mehta from the Weill Cornell Medical Center in New York City, and Dr. John Strickler from the Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. In the presentations of the meeting, first, Dr. Ajani talked about her two targeted approaches to advanced GE cancers. Then Dr. Strickler talked about targeting Claudin 18.2. Dr. Mehta talked about immunotherapy strategies in these patients. And Dr. Klempner finished up with a talk on other novel agents and strategies being considered in patients with these tumors. This is the second part of a four-part series focused on questions and cases that were collected from a survey of 50 community-based general medical oncologists. And to begin, Dr. Klempner started out presenting a case from the community.
Here's three cases. You can read them, and everybody has these on slides, and I'll try to highlight some points throughout these cases. But Rutika, I'll start with you. So 82-year-old guy, Claudin positive, started on Folfox and Zolbe, actually has doing well with the nausea management, but of course started out with a highly emetogenic, multi-agent, anti-emetic prophylaxis regimen. So what do you do when people are doing well? Do you de-escalate? Do you not rock the boat?
If they've not had any nausea in the first two cycles, maybe after the third cycle beyond, I will start to de-escalate and see how they're doing. That's kind of been my approach. I'm surprised 82-year-old tolerating well without any side effects. Sometimes age is just a number, as we say.
And do you feel comfortable doing that because of what John showed?
I think the rates of nausea vomiting are significantly lower beyond the second cycle, so I feel comfortable kind of de-escalating beyond that point.
And Jaffer, touching on nausea strategies, you can comment on the same question, but also, you know, you have discussed and mentioned before, you know, there is in the label, there is essentially a loading dose with Zolbe. And can you talk about, one, how do you feel about that? And two, would you back off on antiemetics as well?
Yes. So in this particular case, I agree with Rutika that slowly you can reduce the number of antiemetic drugs. And then, of course, you can continue to titrate as the clinical course expands. Now, in terms of loading dose, you know, I stopped giving loading dose because of this. I think it is probably responsible for acute gastritis in patients who have the stomach in place. And so we just start with 600 milligram or 400 milligram, depending on the frequency of zolbetuximab, and seem to be doing much better that way.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point, and Dr. Shatara is doing a randomized trial of this initial dosing versus just continuing at the more typical, you know, maintenance dose. So we will actually have some data around this, but I think that's a very reasonable approach. I've done the same. John, I'm going to come to you with the sort of middle case here, which maybe talk about. So this is ask the question of someone who had FLOT and had a recent recurrence, which is unfortunate and always a bad scenario, but they're Claudin positive. And so now they're in the first-line setting with low-dose Folfox and zolbetuximab, doing well but not responding. Doesn't sound like we know if he's progressing but not responding. Maybe theoretically, can you switch chemo backbones? Do you have concerns with synergistic toxicity with other chemo? And then have you ever continued Zolbe beyond progression and essentially swapped out the chemo as a strategy? Or do you think it's something we need to study?
My feeling is that if you did not have a response to first-line zolbetuximab, you're not going to have a response to second-line zolbetuximab. So while I do agree FOLFIRI is a very reasonable chemotherapy regimen, I would not be thinking to continue it without more evidence out there to support that practice. You know, it's interesting. There was a study looking at trastuzumab past progression in HER2-positive gastroesophageal cancer, and that was a negative trial. So, you know, it's important to know that the biology of gastroesophageal cancer is one of heterogeneity. So if you're not seeing benefit, it may be because that target is just not, you know, kind of homogeneously expressed. There's something biologically going on that I think tells us here that we need to move on to a different strategy, to me. But it's certainly worthy of further study.
And in theory, let's say patient has horrible neuropathy and is not a candidate for oxaliplatinum, but it is a true frontline, newly diagnosed metastatic patient who's claudin positive. What do you do in that scenario? Let's say you've got I'll ask Rudika, you get this question.
So
someone
yeah,
who's PD-L1, let's say PD-L1 negative, claudin 90%, and has bad baseline neuropathy. How would you approach this patient?
You should be doing that next trial, just like Breakwater, right? No, I think that's a data-free zone right now. So until more safety data becomes available, I'll be a little skeptical. Although, 62-year-old, I could try a little bit lower dose irinotecan to start with and see how they tolerate. Since they've already had an esophagectomy, maybe the nausea vomiting won't be so bad.
And Jaffer, you've had a lot of experience with Zolbi. Same scenario.
Yeah, so if FLOT failed within few months, like it says, 3-4 months, I would not go to FOLFOX because that's basically using the same chemotherapy. And so we have switched to FOLFIRI-Zolbetuximab in such cases, and we're going to publish a paper. And it's very well tolerated. Of course, you know, again, you don't use the loading dose and manage patient very carefully.
Yeah, I agree. It's reasonable. I know you've also published on FOLFIRI-NEVO in a similar scenario.
That's right.
With before claudin was available. John, I'll come to you because you presented the Illustro data. It's encouraging, I think, that it's like directionally similar to the TST-001 combination that we have also seen a little bit of prelim data. But now you've got that patient in front of you in clinic. Zolbi's approved. Pembro-Nevo are approved. Patient is a candidate for FOLFOX. Are you going to try to get this Illustro regimen?
Yeah, I think we are blessed in the United States that we have sometimes access to things even before we've seen the prospective randomized phase 3 study. And that data is very compelling to me from the Illustro. And I would consider trying to access that combination for the right patient who has all the biomarkers in place. And I would, you know, when I have the peer-to-peer, I would cite that evidence.
Rudika, same question. Jaffer, I'll ask you the same question, too, because this is something that we're all going to start seeing more of.
Yeah, I think young patients, stage 4, claudin and PD-L1 positive, I'll definitely try chemo-Zolbi immunotherapy for those patients. Again, as John mentioned, a peer-to-peer would be necessitated, but we'll do that, quote the Lestra trial.
And Jaffer, same scenario.
Yeah, so if we don't have phase 3 data, so in this particular case, with CPS of 5, I would use Nevo or Pembro Tisle with chemo, because we, especially with Nevo, we all know we have 5-year survival data, and there is a robust tail of like 15 to 18%. We don't know whether that will happen with claudin, so I would favor immunotherapy, chemotherapy, and when there are more data available, I would definitely like to combine the two.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I also recognize that a lot of our patients don't even make it to second-line therapy, so we really need to take our best shot here, and I think that does represent our best and most active combination that we've seen for this scenario. It's always humbling in these phase 3 trials, you know, 40-60% of people get any subsequent therapy.
Yeah.
It's just a reminder it's a bad cancer and some rationale to, you know, put our best shot early on. Let's move on to another case. So this is a young woman, HER2 negative, PD-L1 negative, claudin positive, is having some real nausea, grade 3 nausea on zolbetuximab. What are your sort of management strategies to deal with this? It happens. I mean, we know that it happens. But at the same time, we also know the drug is active. So what is your sort of go-to moves to keep people on. Rudika, you can get first dibs.
Yeah, so I think as Jaffer mentioned, eliminating the bolus is one strategy, but when I typically give zolbetuximab in the clinic, I'm kind of loading them with all antiemetics, 5-HT3 blockers. I'm giving them olanzapine, I'm giving them dexamethasone, famotidine. And despite that, if they're having any form of nausea, when the rate change happens, that's typically when I see more nausea happening. I pause the infusion, give them IV fluids, give them metoclopramide, resolves, and then I'm able to resume the infusion, and they're able to complete in most of the cases. Again, a lot of reassurance is required to patients, in my opinion, trying to educate them, and then obviously give them some breakthrough antiemetics when they go home.
And Jaffer, what about you? And maybe address the second comment, which is about either splitting up the dosing of Zolbi or splitting up the components of FOLFOX and Zolbi. Do you do that? Do you do it in particular scenarios? And what else do you do to manage nausea?
Yeah. So I think, you know, in this case, I will maximize the antiemetics, or let's assume that it is maximized already. And Zolbi is causing significant nausea, vomiting. So you could split Zolbi. You give it for half the dose, stop for half an hour, then do the half the dose. Second would be to prolong Zolbi infusion considerably, which is really a problem for everybody, patient and the clinic staff and all that. But the third thing you could do is reduce the dose.
Right. Yeah, I find what I do in practice the most common is interrupt the dose. Like you said, go for half the bag or until nausea, stop, give it 40, 60 minutes, and then resume and get it in. It is a long day for patients, particularly in the first infusion, but those strategies are important for management. John, I'm going to come to you with this bottom one, which is sort of a common clinical scenario. You know, we know our patients get PEs periodically. So someone who is Claudin positive, doing well on frontline FOLFOX and Zolbi, now fully anticoagulated, let's assume that clinically they're well. Do you have any concerns about drug-drug interactions here?
No, I would feel comfortable resuming the dose of zolbetuximab after the patient's fully anticoagulated here.
Yeah, me too. I think this one is relatively clear. I think we all agree. All right, coming up on last couple cases. So 67-year-old guy, stage 4, GE junction adeno, Claudin positive, PD-L1 negative, HER2 negative, planning to give FOLFOX and Zolbi. Talk about the nausea, but maybe, John, since you presented the data, I'll also come to you. Do you have any reservations about giving this FOLFOX-Zolbi-Nivo triplet in a PD-L1 negative patient?
Yeah, I would. I think for a CPS 0, I'm less inclined to give immunotherapy or immune checkpoint inhibitor therapy. So this is a classic patient where it would be FOLFOX plus zolbetuximab in my clinic. In our case, at our institution, once again, it's a learning curve whenever you bring these new molecules into the clinic and into the treatment room, not just for us as doctors, but for our clinic staff. You know, just to reiterate that point, slow infusion for that first cycle, right? The bad news is also the good news. The bad news is that the nausea and vomiting can be extreme in some cases, not always, but it's usually just in that first cycle, and it really tails off after that first cycle. So if you can get them through that first cycle, it's probably going to be okay. So we throw everything we've got to slow that infusion. We can even drop the loading dose, go to a lower dose. Holding everything, you throw everything you've got with your high anti-emetogenic regimens. The other pearl that we discussed right before getting up here is the fact that if the patient has had a gastrectomy in the past, they also are much less likely to have that extreme nausea and vomiting. So those are also some pearls to keep in mind.
Yeah, I agree. I think this next question mentions something that I think we all have seen in practical point, which is someone's writing in and says they've had 3 patients treating with zolbetuximab, has found lorazepam to be helpful with nausea, and have We've seen this. Yes, I think all of us have seen this. And, you know, the nausea and vomiting with Zolbi is not the typical centrally mediated nausea. You know, this is presumably an effect locally in the stomach lining. And I agree, lorazepam often does help. And people get anxious a little bit, too. So there may be some component of rationale just to manage the longer day and the anxiety that comes with chemo. Because remember, these are patients who have new diagnoses. They've never had chemo before either. It's logical to be a little bit nervous coming into this. I want to move on to this next case, couple cases here. So diffuse type, Jaffer, I'm going to come to you with this one, but young patient, poorly differentiated, diffuse type gastric, PD-L1 positive, CPS of 4, Claudin positive. Patient is quite symptomatic from their disease, and you need some cytoreduction in order to get their symptoms under control. Seeing the Elestro data now, like, if everything's available to you, what are you going for in your most active systemic therapy here?
Yeah, so I think Elestro is good information, but it's not changing standard of practice. So in this particular, you know, I don't use immunotherapy unless CPS is 5 or greater, because we already have that data with particularly Nevo, and I think Pembro may be similar. So I would just use Zolbi plus chemo in this particular case.
And maybe, Rudika, I'll come to you. And maybe just more broadly, like, when do you look at response rate to make clinical decisions? I mean, PFS and OS are, of course, the benchmarks that we look at when we're, like, deciding on approvals and things. But if you're comparing chemo IO and chemo Zolbi, like, do you think of these with different response rates?
I think so. I mean, if a patient is very sick, if you're concerned about gastric outlet obstruction, for example, then in those cases, I start with chemotherapy alone and then add on the biomarker-driven therapy. You know, I agree to Jaffer's point that I was historically doing immunotherapy just with CPS 5 or more. But honestly speaking, you know, the place that I practice, the majority of my colleagues are now having a lower threshold for immunotherapy treatment. So I've kind of reduced my cutoff at this time to 1. But again, in this acutely sick patient, I would first like to just start with chemotherapy before I add on more therapies onto it. Zolbetuximab, I would be a little concerned given the acuity of the illness, and how would I be able to differentiate between disease progression, you know, rapid disease progression versus toxicity from the drug itself. So probably hold off on Zolbi.
Yeah, I would make the point at least that, you know, the objective response rate in CPS less than 5 FOLFOX Nevo is not significantly different than the response rate for FOLFOX Zolbi either. You only get into that 55-60 when you get CPS 5s, 10s, at least from the 649 data. Jaffer, I'm going to come to you with this bottom case, which is about another young patient, metastatic gastric cancer with peritoneal disease. This case, you've got the full IHC HER2 3+, PD-L1 CPS 10, so high, and Claudin positive, and they're a candidate for everything. How do you, I guess this is a question about prioritization of biomarkers, and how do you think through that? Do you look at the hazard ratios, the absolute numbers across trials?
That's right. So I think this is an increasing challenge in the clinic. When we test more biomarkers, you're going to have double positive, triple positive, and maybe more. So in this particular, you have to rank, and I would rank HER2 positivity as number 1, PD-L1 will be number 2, Claudin will be number 3. And this is just based on the maturity of different data. So this patient I will treat with KEYNOTE-811 and hold off on targeting Claudin.
And John, same to you, but let's say Zani is now available. And also, because the Horizon trial used CAPOX or 5-FU platinum, like, would you give FOLFOX with Zani? Typically, we saw that in the phase 2, but not in the phase 3.
Yeah, I think that was done in the phase 3 study just for a practical matter of study execution. I do feel comfortable with the data generated out of the phase 2 with the FOLFOX backbone. Interestingly, and this is another very important point, that in that phase two experience, which was non-randomized with FOLFOX, one of the changes that was made was not just to institute the loperamide prophylaxis for the first 7 days. They also dropped the 5-FU bolus in part two of that study. And after dropping the 5-FU bolus from FOLFOX and putting in the loperamide prophylaxis, the response rate to FOLFOX and zanidatamab was 95%. So I feel comfortable using the FOLFOX backbone, but I would also strongly encourage anyone considering that to drop the 5-FU bolus, because I think the 5-FU bolus does not add much in the way of benefit and add substantial toxicity.
And Rudika, same question, but let's say, well, should we explore trials that do everything? Like, what if you just added the Zolbi on top of, say, KEYNOTE-811?
On top of KEYNOTE-811.
Yes, so you're giving everything. You're acting on every biomarker.
You could try to do that, but as Jaffer pointed out, I think based on what we know about these biomarkers, I think HER2 becomes much more actionable than any other biomarkers here. Your one option could be, because again, we see HER2 loss as well in our patients. If they do have HER2 loss, then subsequent lines of therapy, and if they remain to be CLDN18.2 positive, there are multiple CLDN agents in development which are also looking in the second line space, so that could be an opportunity for targeting CLDN.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to our faculty, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for Expert Second Opinion, Current and Future Roles of Immunotherapy and Targeted Treatment in the Management of Advanced Gastroesophageal Cancers.